Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey, good afternoon on this Saturday, June 16th. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Tennis Worcester.
And it's June 17th.
Yeah, all day.
Is it?
Yeah.
Believe it or not.
I'm a Dave. That rain yesterday just kind of threw me off, and it's like...
You decided, I'm not even going to call this a day.
Yeah, really.
I'll do this day tomorrow.
I'll skip it, yeah.
Let's do over.
But Nick has taken a well-deserved Saturday off. Who knows where? Definitely not running around too fast, but hey, you know, hopefully he's taking it easy, as we should on a Saturday. And we want to remind one thing ahead of time. Tomorrow, folks, in case you haven't checked out, is Father's Day.
That's true.
So, you folks are planning to do anything special for your father, and you kind of forgot about it, you might want to jump on the stick and, you know, look into even simply just spoiling them and doing whatever.
It's tough to be a dad, you know, especially Father's Day comes in this weird spot in the year. Mother's Day is kind of... It's kind of the tip of the spear of those holidays, right? So you get Mother's Day, and then the kids graduate from school, and roughly this time of year.
Blows loose.
And then it turns into birthday season, of course. Everybody's birthday seems to pop up this time of year. And the next thing you know, it's Father's Day, but Father's Day kind of gets lumped in with some of these other things. So I say, take a minute. Give Dad a hug. Tell him you're happy he's your dad, and do something nice for him.
Yeah, because usually, you count on him for doing so many things and that, and just as you do your mom.
Of course.
I mean, it kind of goes both ways for both. I won't say discriminate and say one job is more important than the other. They both are equally as hardworking, you know, doing their tasks to keep the house running, keeping the family to go together. So,
they both
deserve equal time.
And you've got triplets, so the kids outnumbered the parents. How'd you handle that?
Well, there was a day that we went to the hospital as a family of three and then came home as a family of six.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yes, that was the day that I went and visited one of our many local automotive dealerships and said, minivan, please.
Yeah. Well, that's why I still wonder how my grandmother and grandfather did it. I mean, 19 kids.
Oof.
Yeah.
Like, and no reality show?
No. They didn't live long enough to even see that, you know. They passed away, my grandfather in the 60s, and my grandmother lasted a lot longer, God love her soul. I forget the years because with so many, you know, family members and everything else, there's only a few of them left.
No doubt.
Yeah, less than a handful, you know. So, yeah. But, you know, it's still family. And
give your dad a call.
Don't forget. Yeah. Or
if you know your dad's a listener to the show, call into us and you can wish him happy Father's Day from here.
Yeah. Can do that, too. So what do we got kicking in the news there, Steve?
I'm going to turn it over to Dennis while I get the streams up and running.
Well, yeah, this just in, we're working on the streams. Yeah. Steve Ray and the local radio station continues to work you on the streams. Authorities are telling us that he will have the streams up soon. We can confirm that he is actively working on this and that he will continue until he is successful. This back to you, Dave.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Tell you what, well, he's straightening that out. Let's go to the phones and go to Larry. Larry, how are you doing this Saturday, sir?
I am fine, sir, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Larry.
Same to you.
And yes.
I was on the apple cider meeting the other night, and I forgot to pose this question to Steve and the group, so I'll pose it publicly now.
Okay.
I am getting more pop-up advertisements on Chrome or whatever now that I know what to do with. It has gotten downright sickening. And so I've gone into settings and done as much as I know to do in settings, but you go to some of these sites now and the page is so split up with these advertisements. And it seems to me I wasn't that bad about 6 months ago. I don't know what's changed. I did do a Chrome update, but I can't figure out what's changed.
Which kind of sites are you visiting where you're noticing this more often?
This is, let's see, I'm not in Safari right now. I'm in Google Chrome.
Okay.
Let's see, where do I go to find out what version I
have? Well, yeah, tell me more about which sites you're going to where you're noticing these pop-ups.
Well, you know, for instance, I like to fly fish. So the other day, I'm always down at Owatka, and I'm checking the stream conditions. And, you know, I can barely get through it for pop-ups for this and pop-ups for that. Or, you know, they're advertisements.
I think, unfortunately, it's nothing you've done.
It's not you.
It's not
just
you.
Just new pop-ups.
It's companies are putting more and more ads on web pages. There's kind of a fight between subscribers and ads. And what's very annoying are websites that you pay a subscription and you still get ads. We thought we were paying a subscription to get fewer ads.
Yeah.
But then they add more in. Yeah.
Is that the sites that typically deal with news stories or that deal with weather or that deal with things that change often that people want to know about, those tend to be the places that people go most often. And the people who run those websites know this. And they are noticing that they can serve more ads per day if they put ads on those pages compared with others that might be used just for reference on a given topic. So the challenge is not only are they putting sprinkling ads, you know, at the top or at the bottom. No, they're putting ads in the top, in the middle of the story, after every other paragraph.
Some that follow you down the page as you scroll.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And the part that kills me is when you get the same ad in three different formats as you're scrolling down the page, and it's enough to drive you crazy.
On the other half of that are people that put the ads up. Most of the time, ads are commissioned.
Right.
So if I put an ad on the system, I get some money. Well, 50 other people are doing the same thing, and there's only
so many slots,
and there's only so many advertisers.
Yeah.
So you know, I put up the same ad that six other people did, and we all get our penny for it. Yeah. But it's the same. The person reading that website sees that same ad six times.
So Larry, the thing is, it's not that you're doing anything wrong. It's that the world is crazy, not you.
Yeah. It's being inundated by.
So what we can recommend is in Safari, there is a something called a reader mode. So if you were going to a particular web page and wanted to read an article, for instance, the reader mode takes the page and puts it into plain text and makes it easy to read. It also tends to strip out the advertisements to make it easier to read. Now, will that work for you and your stream reports? You'll have to give it a test and let us know. It works better on some sites than others.
Yeah.
There are also plugins that you can get that claim to be ad blockers, and some of those work better than others, and those will block ads on a particular browser that you have installed the plugin for, and that's another thing that you can try.
And there's a setting in Safari Preferences, I'm trying to add it to the list at the moment, where you can turn reader mode on. So if a website supports reader mode, it automatically jumps into reader mode.
Oh, that's cool.
The problem is many websites don't like reader mode because it blocks the ads.
They don't show the ads.
Yeah.
The point of the website is to show the ads.
Right. The website needs the ad revenue in order to keep rolling.
And you can get ad blockers. I use one called Ghostery, but we've also talked about uBlock Origin.
Yeah.
But again, many websites don't work when you have an ad blocker on. You'll see something that's, you know, please turn your ad blocker off, because the website, that's the only way they can stay in business is the ads. And if too many people are blocking ads, then that site goes out of business.
Right.
And Steve, I actually tried that a year or so ago, and then it's like half the sites said, okay, you got an ad blocker on.
Yep.
Can't do business.
Yeah.
And that's just almost doubly annoying.
Yeah. So what the browsers are doing, and both Chrome and Chrome and Firefox and Safari have started doing it, is they're putting tracking blockers built in so that other websites can't track you as you surf around the web. And that helps in marketing companies getting your information. But I almost worry that as a side effect of that, there's more ads coming up, because then it's a first-party ad on the website and not a third-party ad coming from somewhere else.
Okay.
Now, that being said, there is probably more than one source for the stream report information that you're interested in.
Okay.
I would say shop around. You know, go visit the page that gives you the best experience. Maybe you're never going to completely get rid of ads, but you can definitely pick the one
you'll never get rid
annoying.
Of all of them. That's just a fact of life and being on the web.
Right. It's sort of like watching broadcast TV. You know that there's going to be a commercial break, but you can always shop around, visit the website that has the fewest number of ads, and take your business there.
Yeah, that's one thing that gets me, too. You know, like you say, the TV ads, they don't do many at the beginning of the show. But towards the end, when you're waiting to see what's going to happen,
they know.
They inundate you with, you know, 5 and 10 minutes of ads, I swear.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to keep you.
So this thing seems to be ubiquitous now. It doesn't matter where I go.
You got it.
Yep.
I turned on my on Facebook, and I only really use it to keep up with my high school graduation class. Everybody and their brother is there. I've got stuff there now that I have no clue who it comes from. It's just there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is this the same problem, or am I missing something in Facebook that I need to turn off? What?
It's sort of the same problem, and a lot of it was the intent for high school, college, you know, class groups of people to get together who knew each other. But then the advertisers make personas and jump into that group. A lot of times they'll post some relevant questions before they start spamming it with ads, because the group moderators don't usually say no ads. So if someone posts a real message or two and then starts posting ads, that gets them past the moderator.
Damn, yeah.
And then they get banned, but since they already placed the ad, that doesn't matter. Let's make a new fake account and spam somebody else.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, guys, I knew you would have an answer. I'm almost to the point now where I'm beginning to wonder from the good old days when we still have 5 1/4-inch floppy disks, what's the point? I know things are progressing, but this sometimes is just almost to the point where I don't want to look.
Well, we can make some parallels to the television industry and even radio before it, where it started out where there were broadcast shows that were sponsored by a company, and that became the ads. And then we got cable channels where you paid and got no ads. HBO was like the first, you know, pay TV service where you paid them and no ads. Except now it's full of ads for their other properties.
Yeah.
And so we're kind of seeing that on the web now, is that many websites will let you pay a subscription and see less ads, sometimes no ads, but more often than not, it's less ads. So the websites you really like, you can kick in, you know, typically, you know, $5 a month seems to be the common thing. But if you get too many websites at $5 a month, that's a lot of money too.
Yeah, you're back to your cable bill. Yeah.
Google used to have a thing, since Google is one of the biggest advertisers, they used to have a thing where you could pay them a dollar or two a month and they would block the ads at their end. And they stopped doing that.
Right. Well, I could tell you what I've done. If you're a Mac person, you can open up an app called Terminal. And Terminal is a throwback to the old days where you'd have to type in commands and see the result on the screen, and nothing was a graphic and everything.
Old school.
Everything was just straight text. And you can type in a command that goes like this. It's called curl, C-U-R-L, and then a space, W-T-T-R.I-N.
Right.
And if you type that in, curl space W-T-T-R.I-N, it will gift you a nice graphic layout of all of the local weather. No ads, straight info, loads immediately, and it's up to date.
Huh. Okay.
So that's a nice ad-free weather service, which is one of the very common things that people like to do.
Yeah.
No stream reports. I can't help you there. But for straight-up weather, if that's what you want to see, what's happening this morning, what's going on midday, what's going on in the evening for today and the next 2 days, that's right. A great place to take a look.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
I won't take any more of your time. I was just looking for some kind of solution because it's just gotten to the place now that the ads are so bad that
yeah.
I lose track of where I'm reading, and I can't tell, is this part still part of the article, or is it part of the ad, or what? And I was looking at it last night, and I kind of lost patience and just scrapped the whole deal.
I found a website, an article from Huffington Post from 2017 saying, yes, there are too many ads online. And now there's even more.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you guys once again. Happy Father's Day to all of you, and I will continue to listen, and I am a happy supporter.
Hey, thanks for that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Always nice to hear from people who are supporters.
I've got an app called Is It Good to Fly?
Good to Fly?
Yeah.
For UAVs?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it just looks at the weather and says how much wind is it and is it going to rain? So right now it's not good to fly because 23-mile-an-hour gusts.
See, I need that for bike rides.
They have the same one. Good to bike.
We're going
to
talk later.
And there's good to fish.
Good to fish.
Good to hike.
We could have told Larry.
It's the same app with different names.
Sure, where they just set the different windows of what's acceptable.
Yep.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. And we got Logan. Logan, go ahead.
You guys mentioned about being able to say Happy Father's Day. My dad's a longtime listener, and he got me attached to the show. I was hoping you could say Happy Father's Day for him.
Sure.
Yeah, what's his name?
Jason.
Oh, happy Father's Day to Jason.
Happy Father's Day, Jason. Thank you for being a longtime listener and for not only for listening, but for finding other people that you could add as listeners to the show. That's even better.
Making our family grow, and he brought you on in too, so that's great. Tell other folks, please.
Yes. Have a great one.
You guys have a great day, and I greatly appreciate that. Thank you.
No problem.
Happy to do it.
We like taking care, as we said. This is a family, and as Nick has said countless times, when you folks call in and become members of this station, you are part of the family. And, over the years, we've got a lot of folks that, like Larry and a number of folks that call in constantly there because they know they can come here every Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Faithfully, every Saturday, we're here to answer your computer questions. And we only ask you a couple times a year to, help us keep the show on the air. And our members do because they enjoy it that much. And Jason is another one of them, and we appreciate that very much.
It's true.
So have a great day.
You as well, sir.
That's always nice when people bring it. That was how computer users groups started in the very early day. Is that people would come to a meeting,
right.
And if you wanted to come to the next meeting, you had to bring two people.
That was part of the way to get in.
Yep.
Who can you bring?
Okay, we got a little bit of time, so let's go back to the phones. And we got Elmer. Elmer, go ahead, sir.
Hi, this is Elmer from the town of Greece. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, and even if you're not a biological father, if you're acting as a dad, happy Father's Day.
Yeah. No,
thank you.
Absolutely. That's what it really you're very right, Elmer. Sometimes it's some of these stepdads and that don't feel like they're really appreciated for all the work that they do, too. But, family time. It's what you do for the family.
Yeah.
You don't have to be biologically. It's what you actually do to support and keep your family together and going.
Yep, it's the actions.
Those are the things that make the ties and the moments that, the kids down the road will remember forever.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. I see it a lot in the work that I do every day in foster care driving.
For sure.
So thank you very much.
Well, I have a question about print shop for Windows.
Okay, go ahead.
It's been a while, but okay.
Yeah, I currently have print shop 4.0 for Windows, which is still being sold at Amazon, although they are now up to a 6.4.
Mm-hmm.
When Microsoft did some patching for their XPS files in the print spooler, they broke a lot of versions of Print Shop, where if you go to print, it resets your printer, and that's all that happens. Now, I've been working with their tech support. Notice past tense there.
Yeah.
And they showed me an item on answers.microsoft.com where you basically add a registry value to the XPS allowed types. It's called Disable DEC 2022 Patch. I don't mind doing that, but I would prefer an official fix coming from the software publisher because they tend to work a little better than a registry patch. And suddenly the Encore software, who now owns Print Shop apparently, has stopped responding to me. Because what they were doing is I had several rounds of, we're working on a fix for this. Please check with us again in 30 days to see if the fix is ready yet. And, of course, once the fix is ready, I'd be happy to buy the current version of Print Shop because we've used this thing since Print Shop for DOS way, way back.
Yeah.
And
it's
very a lot of neat stuff that we want to do once in a while.
Good.
It's very unlikely they're going to release a patch for an old version.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's perfectly good. I don't mind upgrading to the newer versions. I've done it for several Windows programs, actually.
Looks like the current version is 23 and now compatible with Windows 10.
Yeah, there's also a version 6.4. There's apparently a forked development path. There's actually two paths for Print Shop.
I see. Yeah, I'm finding the registry item here where they essentially go into the .NET framework and then they say to disable the December 2022 patch as part of this.
Yeah, I don't mind doing that because I don't run files that get sent to me over the internet.
Sure.
So
if you're just making your own stuff, that could work.
I mean, I'm just wondering if you know anything about Encore Software specifically, if they're still a viable company or if they're just kind of a holding company that buys old software that the original publisher doesn't want anymore.
I don't know for sure. Neither one of those would surprise me.
Yeah.
They could be very interested in that, and they could be also interested in scooping up older vintage softwares and understanding what the rights are there and...
It looks like Encore is the publisher, but Broderbund is the author.
Okay.
Okay.
And they're both selling version 23 as the current version.
I guess that makes sense in a way.
Because the Mac version of Print Shop is from Software Mac Kiev.
Yeah.
Or Kiev now, I guess.
Kiev,
right. Yeah.
Well, the other possibility, I suppose, they also happen to own Printmaster.
And this has Windows 11, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Printmaster would have this same issue in it or not.
Well, it might be worth a shot.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got a demo version?
Yeah, if there's a free trial.
Yeah, okay. I've got something further on ads, too.
All right, what can you tell us?
This is an Android.
Tell you what, we're going to have to tell you to... Hold on for a moment, because we got to take a quick break, but we will be back in a moment, so just hold tight on the lines, and we'll come back to you folks in just a few moments. You're listening to Sound Bites on Jazz 90.1. We will be back in just a few short minutes, so stay tuned and don't go far.
You can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
We kind of got you caught on guard.
I'm used to be third.
Yeah. All right, we're still got the gentleman on the phone, so go ahead, sir.
Well, I wanted to add one thing about the ads. My wife and I purchased the ad-free version of Words with Friends. It's an Android app, and I suspect it's also available for iPhone. It really is ad-free.
Oh.
And you can actually volunteer to watch more, more ads if you really want to get some coins, which will help you play the game. But
yeah, a lot of my games do that. They stick ads in every now and then, and if you want to progress in the game faster, you watch more ads.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it is possible to effectively play the game. In fact, we play with a guy in Adelaide, Australia, believe it or not. So it's a true worldwide game. No
way. There you go.
And that's probably the fastest way to do it because they'll take a turn, and then 12 hours later, you take a turn. And then 12 hours later, they take a turn.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, have a good one.
Take care. You too.
One thing she mentioned about that WTTR, it's text-based with ASCII graphics.
It is. It's beautiful.
They have a web version. I'm trying to figure out a way to post it to the link list.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine WTTR stands for something. Weather, today,
I think it's just weather with no...
Yeah, with no vowels.
No vowels, and it just happens to be four, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's only one T in weather. But maybe, you know what it is? It's probably, I think this is from some person in Europe. And weather in German anyway, is Das Wetter, which is W-E-T-T-E-R. So if you take all the E's out, you get W-T-T-R.
Yeah, that could be.
So that seems like the most likely.
Okay, let's go back to the phone. We got Pat and Webster. Go ahead, Pat.
Yes, this is an AOL mail question. When the new format came out a few years ago, you had an option to keep the old version or go with the new. Is that obsolete now?
Probably,
yeah.
Yeah.
You may want to look at a mail reader instead of using the AOL website. It'll cut down on all the ads that AOL sticks in is in the first place. Yeah.
The junk that you're getting.
Well, how would I work that out?
What operating system are you running? What computer?
My husband's using Windows 7, and I have a Chromebook.
I don't know any Chrome-based mail apps. There probably are. But in Windows, you've got Thunderbird is probably the most common third-party mail reader. Windows Live Mail already be installed.
Google. Gmail.
Well, no, I'm not saying switching. I'm not switching mail services. I'm saying a mail reader for her AOL mail.
Oh.
Well, sir, with that said, then, you don't have a choice today. So the new format is what it is, right?
Right. So if you use a mail reader, you can quite often customize the format as to way your mail looks.
Right. Well, I'll keep that in mind. Another question. From what you know, would you say that when you get a mail and it has a link in it and it's, you know, say for Target, you used to be able to see that right in the body of the mail. Now you have to copy and paste it and go to Google to open the link. Does that sound normal?
No. It sounds like it's a security precaution.
Yep.
It is very, very dangerous to click on links in email because you don't know if they're a real message taking you to a real website.
So are you saying it's better that you have to blue it and copy and paste it?
Yes. But you shouldn't just go to that website. You should look at the address and make sure you're really going to where you think you're
and
going.
And that little padlock's on there, too.
Yeah. So it could claim to be from Target, but it may not be.
Yeah.
I would paste it into a word processor so it'd give you a chance to inspect it before the computer tries to go anywhere.
You see, not secure.
Yeah. And so that's a big warning that it's a fake address and you shouldn't go there.
Okay.
The other thing you can often do is if you point to the link without clicking, it will pop up a little tooltip.
Yeah, a rectangle. A little rectangle
with the actual website it's going to instead of the website it says it's going to.
Yeah,
and that's a way to tell if it's real or fake.
What the heck is that? And you look at it and then you see, it's QVC or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Just a second, please.
Yeah. And so, part of the problem is that so many fake web emails come out with fake websites.
Yeah, and they look.
Yep.
If you had to, you'd probably be rightfully correct in saying, well, I swear, it looked like the official site.
It
had all the watermarks and everything else like I'm used to all the time.
www and blah, blah, blah.
There's been a huge surge in the last few weeks in fake McAfee email.
Sure.
Saying that your McAfee subscription has expired. And it's fake. It's lying. You click the link. You go to a fake page, and they steal your money.
Right. And I will say, unfortunately, AOL is a place that is common to receive these kinds of messages. People recognize that AOL is a web a provider, an email provider that's been around for decades,
right.
And they target the AOL user base.
Okay.
So be vigilant. You're doing the right thing.
Not to bore you with it, but on the 15th, a day or two ago, my husband was on the computer doing some search through Google, and McAfee came up and says, "You've been hit."
Right.
Yep.
And like you just said, that they're fake. They're making you think. I mean, we use Panda. You know, we don't. And so, but we got out of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the best thing. Just close that window. Yep.
You're infected.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and they use panicky words and scare words and
big red text flashing
whatever they can do to trick you into clicking that link and giving the money.
Hey, so it all fits.
Yeah.
Sounds about right, Pam.
You got it.
All right. Well, that's a wrap. My husband just interjected something on the new mail version. It puts up a little postage stamp, a little thumbnail if you get a link with a picture in it.
Okay.
And then when you click that to make it bigger so you can see it, because this is just like a postage stamp, it goes to the right instead of more in the body of the letter. Does that sound right?
Hard for me to know for sure. It doesn't seem bad on the face of it, but I don't know for sure.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, thank you for your time.
All right. Okay. Yep. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye now.
It's tricky. I haven't personally been in the AOL mail viewer in quite a while.
I haven't seen that in decades.
I just logged into my Yahoo Mail in forever, and I have 914 unread ads.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
With links to more, I'm sure.
Yep. Well, a lot of messages from Flickr. Oh, yeah, because Flickr shut down their free service, and then you had to start paying for it. So I stopped. I have so many photo album scattered on so many picture services that were free and then stopped being free.
Right.
That's why I keep them now to Google.
Google's not free anymore.
It is for me because I have.
Because you have a Pixel phone?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that can
that's
be
good.
That's a good thing.
So not right now I'm using Amazon.
Right.
Because I have a Prime subscription for everything else it gives me.
And yes. Yep. I've been doing that because then it will show them nicely on my Echo Show 8.
My Amazon Fire TV.
Yes.
Comes up. Yep.
It's nice to see pictures of my kids when I wake up in the morning. So
I always wonder how it decides if it is truly random, what picture it brings up. Because, I remember that. That was 20 years ago. Right. Oh, that was yesterday, you know.
Yeah. I think they are, this is just me, but I think they're trying to show you stuff that's from around this date.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, relative to that
on this day. Because Amazon does that, too. Here's what happened this year.
Yeah.
Or, you know, 6 years ago this day.
Right.
So, okay, let's go back to the phones. We got Christine. Go ahead, Christine.
Yes. Hi, guys. I'm hoping you can shed some light on something.
Okay.
It's another email question. So I use Outlook, and I have a local ISP.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, like a number of months ago, when I send email, it shows, like, let's say in my outbox, I have one email to go out, but it's trying to send two. It's always like one more than I have in my outbox. And then it times me out. Like, it seems to me like there's something somewhere that's like clogging up my email, and maybe I'm not saying that very well, but I can't find it. I've talked to the ISP with no luck.
Right. That can be tricky. I will say I've seen things like this. The one time that I did see something like this, it was from a client who was trying to send a message, and they were trying to attach some photos to it. And the photos they were attaching were
too big.
They were too big. Well, each individual one was fine, but they were trying to send like six at once in one message. And what happens is your computer starts a conversation with the mail server. And it says, "Hi, I've got a message I want to send out." And the mail server says, "Sounds great. Who do you want to send it to?" And, "Oh, I want to send it to this person and maybe these other people." "Okay, sounds good. What's the subject line?" "Okay, here's the subject." And it hands it over. And then it says, "Okay, so what's the body of the message?" And it says, "Well, the body of the message says, 'Hi, so-and-so, here are pictures from the blah, blah, blah.'" And then it starts going, "Zzz." And all of that noise is all of the binary code it takes to represent those pictures. And it keeps going and keeps going, and the server says, and keeps listening until a little timer goes bing, and that timer is how big is the message allowed to be at the server. And at that point, it simply hangs up. It says, I'm done talking. And what happens next is, a few moments later, your computer says, hi, mail server, I've got a message I want to send. Okay, well, I want to send it to these people. And it tries over and over and over again. And it doesn't necessarily kick back an error message to you. But in the meantime, what happens is none of the messages you want to send subsequently ever go through.
Have you ever tried opening the message in the outbox to see what the other message is? Is it a previous message that you actually sent? Or is it a duplicate of the message you're sending now?
In the outbox, it's always showing me just the one that I want to send. It's not showing me anything else.
Now,
a mystery.
Yeah, now, is this including a picture in it, or is it a big text? Or
no, the one, like, it happens with all of the emails that I'm trying to send out of this one, you know, out of my email. So eventually they will send, but it might be a couple hours. It might be, you know, like.
No, are you trying to send it to a lot of people, or is it just one or two?
No, just a regular, like, it's just regular email, like to one person sending a message.
Okay, yeah.
There is an option to turn on logging in Outlook, so you see the log file of what Outlook is talking to the mail server.
Yep, that conversation. You kind of get a transcript of what's going on.
It may be possible, looking at that log file, to tell what's going wrong and then fix it.
For instance, if you were able to see line items that said, oh, this message that seems to be that second one, that hidden one.
Yeah.
If you could tell, for instance, what the recipients are or what the subject line is, that might help. Now, the question is going to become, gentlemen, let's say she says, I need to get rid of this. It turns out, this is nothing, but it is blocking all my other messages. How do I get rid of this?
What I have found when that happens is you log into the ISP's webmail.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not actually trying to download anything to your computer, but you're looking at it on the web. And then you can delete that stuck message from the webmail.
Okay.
Okay.
That could be good.
We see that a lot with receiving, too. Even more so in the olden days of dial-up when connections were slow.
Yes, right.
You've got 20 messages coming in, and it says 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Tick, nothing. Tick, tick, tick,
tick, tick, tick. 7, 8, 9, 10. Because 6 was a pitcher.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
So it looked like it stalled, but it was.
It didn't. Right. It just took a longer time to process.
Yeah. Now, if you try all of this and it still doesn't work, I'd recommend making contact with that local ISP and ask for their support department and explain the situation. They may have the ability to see things on their side with more detail.
See what the hang-up is.
And they might be able to see what the conversation looks like on their side and offer some more details that can help you.
You could even try a different mail reader like Thunderbird temporarily and see if the same thing happens. That will let you know if it's at your end or their end.
Right. I would say if the ISP recommends switching over to a different mail program just to see if things change, then that's a great time to do
try
that.
Try switching over to, like, just quick open up a Google account and send.
That won't help with her current email address.
Because it's stuck.
Yeah, right. If using a different mail reader.
She's using Outlook.
Yeah.
The Outlook program, not Outlook.com website.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So Microsoft has 20 different things called Outlook.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do have another email, a work-related email, and I have both of them hooked up to Outlook, right?
Yeah.
So I can take that message want to send out of my personal email that won't send because something's holding it up, and I can just change, you know, who's sending it to, you know, to make it from my business one, and it'll go right away.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, so as long as that's fine with your business.
Yeah.
Well, and that does sound like it's then something at your ISP if the messages have trouble only when they're trying to use that ISP.
Yeah.
What I might suggest is checking to make sure the sending mail server is right. Do you mind saying who the ISP is?
It's Lightlink in Ithaca, based okay. in Ithaca, New York.
Sometimes what we see is they change their servers. And so it used to be, you know, smtp.lightlink.com, and, right. and now it's mail.lightlink.com.
Yeah, check with them.
Yeah, to see if they changed
their server. That's changed anything. Yeah. You know, it's worth a phone call to quick just say, hey, did you happen to change your ISP?
Yes, the SMTP verbiage? Sending yeah. sets. And so most of the time when a ISP does that, the old address still works, but then it forwards to the new address.
For a period of time.
And that could be what time is timing out, because that forwarding isn't working anymore.
But yeah,
I'll tell you, I did call, and you know, when I first got totally frustrated, and really, and then the guy was like, you know, he looked at things and he couldn't help, like we couldn't find it. And so then months went by, and finally I'm like, okay, I'm so frustrated with this. I called again, and just really sadly, that gentleman passed away unexpectedly. They're just in damage control. They're just trying to, you know, handle everything. So there is someone who, you know, they're going to try to look at it again, hopefully, with what you tell me and what hopefully the one IT guy can help. We'll figure something out, I hope. So.
Yep, I hope so too.
Good luck. Let us know, though.
Oh, I will. And when let me ask one other thing. The log that you talked about, where do I go to see that?
I posted a link on the soundbites.org website.
Okay.
On how to turn that logging on in Microsoft Outlook.
Wonderful. Thanks, guys. I appreciate all your help.
Thank you. Yep. Have a great day.
Thanks for calling.
You too. Bye-bye.
So now the big trick is remember to turn logging off.
Right.
Because then your computer fills up with logs. We had one customer brought the computer in because the drive was full, and we found like 100 gigabytes of mail logs.
Oh, boy.
That had been accumulating for 10 years because they never turned it off.
Right. Well, good news. Good news. With one RM command, we can make that go away, and poof, you've got boatloads of space back.
Yeah.
That's good news.
Yeah, one of our listeners said have her check the draft folder.
Draft that folder, could be. Outbox. Yeah,
because sometimes I actually see it a lot on Google. You start a message and your mail reader saves a draft.
Thank you,
for
Andy,
you.
For that.
Which is nice. You know, save a draft. That's handy. Then when you send the message, it's supposed to delete the draft.
Right.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. No, it keeps it there in the. Yeah. Bucket, because it's so dumb it forgets to
with
do it.
With Outlook, the other thing I would do is try and maybe put it in offline mode. Because if you put it in offline mode, then it's not going to try and initiate that conversation with the sending mail server. And that may...
Then you can look in the outbox.
You may be
there.
Able to see both messages in the outbox at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Depends upon how that version of Outlook was written. Do they take it out of
Microsoft?
Do they take that line item representing that mail message out of the list as they're sending it, or do they wait until it's known to be sent and then take it out of the list?
Depends on what week of the month it is what update they're working
or
on.
Which product manager they were trying to appease at the time.
They destroyed.
Most people never see the outbox because the mail goes so fast.
Right.
You never notice there's an outbox there because it disappears when there's nothing in it.
Yes.
Well, the one thing lately that's really ticking me off with Windows, though, is I've got two machines with Windows 11 on it.
Okay.
No, I'll take that. One's got Windows 11, the other's got Windows 10. And it's got this stupid voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I go to, you know, launch a program.
Yeah.
And it starts talking. It says, well, turn it off. I go to where it says turn it off, and it's turned off. How do you turn off something that's already turned off?
Turn it on, then go back and turn it off.
You gotta go to Windows.
Been there, done that at least three times.
You go to the start menu, you go to Windows, settings, you go to haunting, and then you switch it to off.
No, I just get so frustrated. You swing 180 degrees and go onto the Unix box.
Where you turn your speakers all the way down.
I've done that too, yeah. I've turned the speakers off. It's easier than to listen. You're now opening this program. Oh. Or, you know, you go to shut it down. Do you really want to shut this down? Well, I wouldn't push the button if I didn't want to.
No, this is not Cortana. It's something else.
No, it's just, yeah, just Windows. Windows, every time you click on a, I click on a program to open it up, it tells me, and it'll read some of the things that it's doing.
That's the accessibility yeah. voiceover options.
Yeah, no.
Apple calls it voiceover.
Yeah, right.
No. No,
it has a built-in screen reader called VoiceOver.
Yeah, yeah. Screen reader. Yeah, no, that's...
If you want to learn how to use VoiceOver, press it.
Screen reader's off, too.
Yeah. Wow.
They just did something that... And it's just an update.
Have you tried turning it on? Maybe the switch is backwards.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. Have you tried turning it off, Mac, on it yet?
Yeah.
How many times do you want to know? Besides Italian street gestures at the screen.
Have you determined if it flies yet? Up the window.
It's getting pretty close, and it's up on the second floor.
Narrator. Microsoft calls it narrator.
Yep. No. Something in one of the updates did it because, you know, like my wife's machine doesn't do it. She's got Windows 11 or Windows 10. No, hers is fine. Doesn't do it.
You know, they should call into Soundbites, and then they could answer your question.
Well, there's other people saying the same thing's happening to them. So you're not alone. That helps.
Oh, that it's not just in your makes head. Me feel so good.
It's not in your head. It's not just your machine. That's
especially this head. Yeah. Yeah, no, and it just all of a sudden started up, like I say, with an update.
Oh, gee. Here's one from 8 years ago. Someone asking the question, narrator won't turn off.
It's back.
Yeah, narrator on Windows 7 won't turn off.
Yeah, they've done it again. They've hit some type of switch in it that, yeah, it'll sit there and, like you say, I just wind up turning down the speakers
because
that's the easiest, and it's like...
It's all fine, yeah, until you want to hit YouTube or something else.
Reminds me of a call I got years ago with a customer. He said there were black lines on his screen.
Okay.
So I said, well, try a different monitor. Same black lines. All right, must be a video card. So it was a two-hour drive. I took a new video card out to them.
Yeah.
When I got there, it's not little black lines. It's rectangles around words.
Oh, boy.
I said, well, is the screen reading to you? Well, yeah. I just turned the volume off. You've got... VoiceOver turned on. It's the screen. You don't need a new video card. You need to turn VoiceOver off.
Good news.
Good news. You don't need to buy this really expensive. Super Mac. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
20-inch color monitor. It was like $5,000 for the monitor and $1,000 for the video card to drive
it. 90 pounds.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right.
You had to put on your weight belt just to move it.
We still work with him. Hey. Every time he comes in, I tell him that's my favorite story.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
All right. Believe it or not, folks, you have made it through the first hour of Soundbites. But as Nick would say, don't hesitate. We will be back right after a few of these messages. So this is your chance to, if you got to grab something to drink, take a bio break or make a quick run out to the kitchen and grab something, snack or something to eat, by all means do. But we will be back very shortly with more entertainment and hopefully some stories to share. And we invite you folks, you know, hey, some of the lines are still open. So by all means, give us a call at 585-966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415 because we will be back with more sound bites in just a short.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Grease Rochester, a public service of the Grease Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Sound Bites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we are...
We just wanted to panic you, Dave.
Yeah, Dave. What do you think?
Would be the first time. Definitely won't be the last. You know that. How many decades ago we used to sit there and time it so we'd hear you pull into the old garage? Yep, Steve's here. News is over.
Honk, honk.
Yeah. He'd be on. But we've got on the phones Larry calling back. Go ahead, Larry.
I just tried... I got back into Safari.
Yes.
And what I've discovered is that there are some pages that Safari will automatically put in reader mode or something like that. And then if you actually tap the little reader button, the whole thing shows up like a printout or something.
Yeah.
Didn't know that before. So I went back to my Oaka Creek stream report, and boy, is it ever more refreshing.
Oh, good.
Hey, that's great.
So, just wanted you to know. So I started tooling around to some other sites, and some sites don't see it, or Safari doesn't see it on some things, and some things it does, but it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, some sites don't like to support it because it hides all the ads.
Yeah. Just wanted you to know that, so thank great. You for your support.
Thank you for the information.
Yep. How is the fishing today?
I'll be going a little later in the evening. Normally, I'm out there when the sun comes up. But stuff to do today, but I'm not going to miss a good day of fishing. A
little windy to fly today, but...
I've been out there in worse.
Yep.
I've been out there on some days when it just blew the fly right back in your face. But
That's no good.
But today is manageable.
There you go.
Yep.
All right, have fun, sir.
Yeah.
Yep, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, we did, Nick also got back to us and was saying that young lady with the mail issue.
Yes.
What she might want to do is also clear her cache.
Okay.
Clear out the cache, and there might, in Outlook, that it might be stuck on something. So go ahead and clear out your cache and see if that helps with the problem.
Interesting. Okay. So they're saying, according to Microsoft's support website, items from an Exchange account are stored in the Outlook cache. If the cache becomes corrupted, it may cause synchronization problems with the Exchange server. Aha. To solve this problem, you can empty this cache so Outlook can download all the items in your Exchange account again. All right. So let's see.
I'm finding one pointing to the local app data folder.
Right.
So it depends if she's using Exchange or IMAP at the other end, and she probably doesn't know.
I'm guessing if she's using an independent ISP, they are not likely to be an Exchange provider. I'm guessing they're probably using IMAP.
Yeah.
So this may help. In the nav pane, control click on the Exchange folder, then click properties. In the general tab, click empty cache. All right. So if it's an Exchange provider, then that would work. If it's an IMAP situation, that may or may not work.
Yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Thanks, Nick. Thank you for listening, Nick.
Yeah. So let's go back to the phone. We've got Alan from Durham, North Carolina.
Mm.
Go ahead, sir.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great.
Well,
how's things down there?
There ain't nothing down here. You guys have no idea how rich a life you have up there.
We've got friends in Wilson, so we drive through there every now and then.
I've got a friend.
I know people there.
Good.
Question.
Yes.
And I don't hear Nick on the phone here, so I guess maybe he's not there today.
No, he's not here today. He took a well-deserved Saturday off.
Well, this is kind of a Nick-related question.
We'll do our best.
He was talking about he has automatic bill payers or some kind of a computer bill payer so he doesn't have to write checks anymore.
Okay.
And I looked at some of those. And it looks like you have to do the same amount of work with them as you do with writing checks. You've got to enter all your stuff every time and send the payment every time. Are there any that you know about that'll just pay your checks and you don't have to do anything?
Most of the time, you just have to enter your information once and then...
Usually with your bank, right?
Yeah. Well, a lot of banks offer bill payment services built into your bank system as well. And then,
I never saw
and
that.
Then you fill in... your water bill, electric bill, whatever.
Power bill.
Power bill, yeah. And and you just say pay now. A lot of times those...
Actually, there's another thing you guys say that we don't have.
what bank is it offhand?
It's Truist.
Yeah, we don't have that bank up here.
That's true.
Yeah.
But what you can often do is those specific companies you want to pay often have auto pay built in at their end.
Yeah.
Where you put your information in once.
Yeah, each company. So say like your gas and electric or your water utilities. Usually you can go to them and say, can you put me on auto pay? And what they'd want is your banking information. So you supply it to them, and then you might get in the mail or an email, depending on which way you want to do it. They'll send you a notice, say, okay, well, on this date, we're going to subtract this much money from your account for water bill.
And you have to make sure you find a trusted provider because you're giving them your bank account details.
Yeah, so you want to make sure, you know, you're setting it up with that particular company. Because, yeah, up here, I mean, most folks have RG&E, what we call our local utilities is RG&E and the Monroe County Water Authority have it do it auto pay, you know, and they just automatically, they let you know what day they're going to take it out. So it's no big surprise to your checking account. But, you know, it's done automatically and you don't get these notices, oh, well, we're going to shut you off for non-payment.
No, we don't need that.
Okay. I'll give it a whirl.
Yeah.
Yep.
A lot of places will do that. I mean, even up here, car dealers, bank loans, and everything else. If they can get it, it's to their advantage because they know automatically they're able to go to your account, draw the money out, not waiting for you to, snail mail the a payment in and get it whenever you do.
A lot of times, especially newer companies require online automatic payment.
If you want to get the lowest rate for a loan, the one they're advertising.
I mean, up here, I used to mail out so many things.
Yeah.
That's why the post office is having financial difficulties because so many folks have gone to auto pay.
Hmm. Well, and I just found that Truist Bank uses the Zelle platform for bill payment. So you can do automatic bill payment from your bank.
Yep, and Zelle is trusted. I've been using that quite a bit.
Somebody bought them. They started out independent, and one of the banks bought them because, hey, that's a cool idea.
Yeah. And now a lot of banks are aligned.
So you can do it on their website or with the Zelle mobile app on a mobile device.
Well, so help me, I couldn't find it, but I'll take another look.
Okay. Yeah.
Or just give your bank a call. Go in there and sit down with them, and maybe they can walk you through it.
That's an idea.
Wow.
Yeah. Face-to-face interaction.
Yep.
No, it's the kind of thing that makes your life a lot easier, one fewer thing to worry about. And it's true that you do have to give up. Either if you're going to the vendors themselves, you do have to give them your bank account information and your revenue information.
Yeah, take your checkbook with you so you have that information.
Yep, right at the bottom of your checks.
Oh, and Truist is one of the owners of Zelle.
Ah.
It's a conglomeration.
And it makes life so much easier. You know, it's affords you the comfort of knowing that it's taken care of. And, you know, keeps your credit rating up there good, you know, that you're paying on time and everything else.
Well, the thing is, I was in the hospital for a while, and I was kind of nervous about that.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, this it would eliminate the worries.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Especially with things that are pretty standard, you know, gas, electric, cable, phone, internet.
All your typical stuff.
Yeah
credit cards and all that other stuff.
Well,
that's
another thing. Credit cards is great because if you can make a regular payment, that keeps your credit rating good. You're not making
and you're not
fees.
Getting hit with late fees.
So, and you can... Even if you just tell you can usually tell the credit company, hey, just even take out the minimum payment by default. And if I make a larger payment to pay it off, that's great.
That's my good.
But let's say maybe I end up in the hospital.
Like
you're talking about.
Oh, shoot.
Stuff happens, right? So
that
way you're covered. You at least know the minimum's there. You at least know your account's in good standing. Even if you've got a small balance, it's not the end.
Because life does happen.
That's true. That's true. And it gives you fewer things to worry about.
Just found Truist Bank was founded in 1872 in Wilson, North Carolina.
That sounds about right. I'd buy that.
Yeah, 151 years ago. Wow.
Goodness.
Was it Americans think 100 years is a long time and Europeans think 100 miles is a long distance?
Okay.
All right, yep.
Well, have fun down in Durham.
Thank you.
You usually hear people from Raleigh, not from Durham, though. Because but it just
well, it's usually Raleigh-Durham.
Yeah, Raleigh-Durham is like one thing.
Yeah, it's one side of the city or the other. Because I used to have property down in Pinehurst, which is just a little south of Raleigh-Durham.
Those are always the people I hear about. I don't have a lot of relatives in that area, but the people who get half an inch of snow and everybody freaks out. And I went down there, and I was driving through to Florida. And I said, well, what's going on down here? And one thing I noticed is on their highways, the highways are completely flat. They don't, like, crown the roads where the center of the traffic is higher than the edges. If you let the water run off and things, I'm like, oh, well, plus I'm sure they have no plows or anything else to handle.
Yeah, no, they're not prepared for it. Our friend Scott that listens to the show is down there in North Carolina. And, it's
just different.
Yep. Yeah.
Unique. Yeah. That explains why they get just enough to cover the ground and they freak out and go buy milk and eggs. And
We usually end up at that Cracker Barrel right off 95 in Wilson.
Oh, sure. No, there's a Cracker Barrel at every nexus of every interstate. I worked with a company who makes greeting cards, and they had a contract to supply greeting cards to Cracker Barrel, and he had a map on his wall that showed where all the different Cracker Barrels were. And it was pretty much, you take the interstate highway system and any place that two of the interstates came together, there was a Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
And it was by choice.
Well, there you go. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Steve from Greece. Go ahead, Steve.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello.
Who walked in?
Pardon me. I am working on a friend's computer, lives in Chicago. I'm working through TeamViewer.
Okay.
She has half a dozen Word documents that she saved to the desk, Windows 11.
Okay.
She saved to the desktop.
All right.
She can't delete them. They will not delete at all. I've gone in and deleted them from OneDrive. I've tried to change the properties. The properties are grayed out.
Are these Word documents that she created herself?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you tried doing it in safe mode?
I have not. I'm not sure I can get to her through
Teams. Yeah. Oh, right. You can't. She'll have to do it in safe mode, and then...
Yeah, that's not...
I don't even know if TeamViewer will work in safe mode.
That's the thing.
That's not going to happen.
I am seeing a mini tool on how to force delete a file that won't delete.
I saw that. I'm a little leery to do it, but I'm more than willing to if you guys think it's safe.
Is there a way to do it through PowerShell?
Probably. And this one gives a terminal command.
Yeah, I would. That would be the way I'd go. If it's not going through the graphical interface, then I would probably go into PowerShell and navigate to that particular desktop. Do a list, make sure that the things show up, and then I would try and remove each one individually.
You may have to install PowerShell on her computer first.
Sure I would. She won't do that.
Yeah.
It might not require PowerShell. You might be able to get it done just with the command prompt, perhaps.
Yeah, the tip that I found was to quit Windows Explorer, force it to quit with Task Manager,
okay,
open a terminal window, and... use the RM
changing
command.
The attributes.
Well, no, use using the delete command at the terminal.
Remove command.
Yeah.
At a minimum, that's probably going to give you a better error message to let you know what's going on.
I do get an error message that says an unexpected error is keeping you from deleting this file. If you continue to receive this error, you can use the error code.
And then some big octal.
Yeah, 0x8007016 alpha, and that doesn't supply a lot of help at all.
Because I can remember when we used to have to go into the terminal window or DOS prompt and go into that folder where the files were and
do it manually.
Change the attributes.
Because
they are read-only.
I always get a kick out of that message about an unexpected error. Aren't all errors unexpected?
But if you could copy them into a folder, on the drive.
See if you can move it to a folder and then delete that folder.
And then go into that folder.
I get the same I try to move them, I get the same error.
What's the directory structure command utility? Check disk. But that's, again, something she'll have to run herself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you can start. Well,
it won't let you put them at the root directory, copy them, and or move them to. It won't let you do the move command?
Nope. Well, I haven't typed in. I haven't gone to. I haven't gone that far into to typing the commands, but it won't let me move. Won't let me change folders. When I look at the properties, all the data is there.
Are they marked as locked?
That sounds like a directory corruption then.
Well, yeah. Maybe. I would say if the attributes show that the files are locked or set to read only or...
There's no permissions and I can't turn them on. It's all grayed out.
Okay.
Yeah. You're not an administrator. Maybe log in as the administrator?
But then again, how do I get there? I get her to log in as administrator. Because I, once on TeamViewer, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to... Can't drive out there and work on it. She's in Chicago.
Well, she should be able to tell you on the phone if she logs in, if she's administrator.
Yeah, if you go to the user's control panel and look at her account, it should tell you if she's a standard user or an administrative user.
I can give that a try, but unfortunately, she is very scared of computers.
Right. I would say, for my money, the... Number one, make sure that it's an administrative user you're working with, because chances are good if it's a standard user, there may be something blocking you from dealing with these. And secondarily, log into some kind of command prompt. The CD, the change directory command to get to her desktop folder, and then do a listing. There's often a way to do a listing that will give you more details about particular files, or try and run the rm command, which is the remove files command, and see if you get something more specific about the error message when you try and delete a particular file.
Okay, sounds good. All things to try?
Yep.
Yeah, and I posted a link that has a dozen different ways to try to delete different files in different ways too.
Right. So hit the soundbites.org webpage and you can see our linked list there.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. I hope I'm not calling back next week.
Well, I hope it's with us to tell us about your success.
Okay. I can do that. Hopefully.
Very good.
Thank you very much. You have a good day.
Yep. You too. And it's always annoying when a file won't delete.
Yeah.
One of the things I've seen Word do is leave temporary files behind.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that usually happens in the directory you opened your real file from. So if she opens a file from the desktop, it makes a temp file, which is supposed to be invisible, but maybe she's got invisibles turned on. And then when you close that file, it's supposed to delete the temp file, but sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
And then the system thinks that temp file is still open, so you can't delete it.
Right.
Usually rebooting fixes that.
I remember seeing that 10 years ago now, when Mac users would try and connect to a Windows server and save Windows Word Mac Word documents on a server, that it would create those files and wouldn't actively get rid of them the way it was supposed to.
I say the few times I've had it happen is I've wound up copying or moving them to the root directory, going to a DOS prompt.
Right.
And then from there, no matter what I was doing, wasn't getting rid of it. And at the DOS prompt, I could sit there and change the attributes because they were set to, like he said, all grayed out. And it was set to a read-only mode, so it wasn't going to let me delete it. So I could go ahead and change the attribute to read-write and then delete it.
And the fact that he can't even change the attributes, this is probably what Dennis said. He's not an administrator, so it won't let him do that.
Yeah, if he's not, yeah. I don't know what, when you go into, I would think.
Well,
it depends on how that program, the computer is set up.
Yeah, because typically with Windows, you're not the administrator. You can elevate your privileges to administrator. But to do something like that, you'd actually have to log in as the administrator.
Maybe that's what he needs to do.
Right, but you can't do that. So if you have a TeamViewer session open and you log out, it'll probably cancel the session.
Yeah. But what I'm thinking, though, is if he got her on the phone.
So, and then do a video chat. So she can be pointed.
He can see, yeah, so he could see her screen.
Yeah.
And
out of band.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then create an account that is definitely, say, for Steve, you know, as administrator, in administrator mode, so that it could be logged in as an administrator. Because if she's in, you know, just standard mode, that's great. Because then that way she can't mess it up as much as she's got fears of the computers.
Everyone should always run normally in standard
mode.
Which
I would say keep. And then have her create this super user, you know, an administrator, and then log it in, and then have Steve log in to that account, and it would give him more rights.
Yep.
But, yeah, he could do a lot, too, with just the team, you know, instead of getting into the computer, just go in via the phone and see her screen and walk her through that, too.
Yeah, then she'd have to set up some sort of video chatting app. I don't remember if Steve is Android or iPhone.
He's Android.
He's Android, yeah. So does Android have a video chat program? Google Meet can do video chatting on computer and Android.
Skype
could do it, but you have to have an account set up ahead of time. Pretty much everything you have got to have an account
Windows
set up ahead
nowadays,
of time.
I think Skype's included with Windows 10 and 11.
On new computers, I would think
11, yeah.
Since Microsoft bought Skype.
Yeah, Skype has been in there for quite a while with Windows 10 and 11, I know.
So that's one way Steve could do it is have her point her phone camera. So he can say, all right, click here. All right, move your mouse 3 inches down, 2 inches right, and click there. And
yeah.
Yep.
And see, you know, guide her through to see what it actually looks like while she's doing it, not while he's in there.
Yeah.
So hopefully, Steve, that helps you.
It's tricky.
It's hard, you know, when you don't have it there in front of you.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're doing the best we can to visualize stuff at times, and it's like what people will describe to us and what's actually there.
Oh, here's something.
What's that?
Run, you can go to, I'll find a good link for it. Start, type CMD for command line.
Yeah.
And then in the menu that pops up, there's a run as administrator.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then he'll have administration privileges and might be able to delete the files.
So if you pick run as administrator and you are logged in as an administrative account, then you're good. If you do that while you are logged in as a regular
user,
it's going to prompt you for administrative credentials.
Yep, and you're going to have to type those in.
May or may not have. Now, here's the thing. My gut says if this lady in Chicago was the sole user of the computer, chances are good there's only one user account defined, and I don't know if Windows will even allow you to set up a computer with only one account and have the account not be administrative.
Yeah, that's usually the default for Windows.
Right.
But Windows has been pretty good lately about it being a standard account, and you have to elevate as administrator privileges in the same account with the same password. But by default, you're not running as an administrator.
Well, that's a great way to do it for security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right. I imagine Windows. At some point, you have to provide credentials. Now, do you use the same password for both?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, then that could be possible.
That run as administrator may work for him then.
Right.
And then he can do that from a TeamViewer session because it's not logging out and back in again.
True.
Again, like I said, if he uses Skype or that, set it up just to double check, you know, to save all this frustration. Because since he is dealing with somebody that is very novice and a little skeptical in playing around with computers, at least he can see what's on the screen and walk her through it to get him at least the admin privileges. Because setting that up is relatively easy. And then she could just sit back and, you know, restart the computer, comes up with two logins.
Right.
Just select the admin one, and then Steve can log into that one.
Yep.
It's supplying support remotely is tricky.
Yeah.
Now, luckily, the tools have gotten a lot better.
And the bad guys are doing it so easy now.
Right. That's why you got to work with somebody you trust.
Yeah.
All right, folks. That music tells us we got to take a short break here. But don't go too far. And we've got somebody just calling in right now on the phones. But, you know, we've still got another half hour of soundbite. So pick up the phones. Give us a call with your questions. We'd love to hear from you. And we will be back very shortly with more conversations on the various topics that we're running into today on Soundbites Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to this edition of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And I forgot who we got on the phone.
Oh, come on, Dave.
Go ahead, caller. I thought we had somebody, but
we finished.
They dropped out.
No wonder you forgot. Yeah,
we finished Steve and his friend.
He does that a lot.
Yeah.
I got a friend. And you know what? Notice one thing. I won't say it.
it's always good. You people that have a little bit of knowledge tend to be the IT support for their family.
Yeah, and help people out because some folks are still very timid about it. Yep. You know, even though the modern generation, you know, the younger kids, they've grown up with a device in their hand and, you know, can work through anything. And you know, it used to be the big joke, I need this problem solved. I'll go ask my little grandson. Yeah. He's 7. He knows it all.
The TikTok that I saw yesterday was from a guy a little bit younger than me who had his daughter on, and they were recording a podcast together. And she was asking how you were using the internet in the old days and what you did before that. And he was explaining that you could look things up online, but before that you'd have to use books. And he was explaining that before the internet you'd have to use, and he said, and there would be people that would come door to door and sell you this giant collection of books. And she'd say, okay, so you get all these books. Do they have all the questions in them? So you look up your question, and then it gives you the answer. No. The question, the books would have letters on the spine of them, and you'd have to. The first one would be A, and the second one would be B, and C, and D, and you'd have to go and open it up. And the first one might you go to E for elephants, and learn about elephants. And she was coming at it from a, I have a question about this. Here is my question. And he was coming at it from, here are the subjects.
Because that's the way we do it now. We type in the question and get
the answer back.
Links back.
Yeah.
I read an interesting comparison. It was Steve Gibson. Chatbot. And you know, you ask a question and you get plain English paragraphs back.
Right.
And so they called it a clever regurgitator.
Yeah.
So you type a question into Google, you get websites that may have an answer. You type this exact same question in the chat bot, it looks at the websites, pulls the relevant text, and gives you an answer as in the form of an essay that kids are already trying to sneak by at school. But so it's a clever regurgitator. Oh, and that brings up something that we've talked about before the show.
Yep.
That at Apple's big announcements last week, they never said the words artificial intelligence or AI.
Yeah.
They said machine learning a couple of times. They did enhanced search algorithms, things like that. And I was watching a video from Marques Brownlee about Google and their last I.O. Every 5 seconds was AI this and AI that. Google is now an AI company. But that's the wrong word. It's not artificial intelligence. It's not the intelligence we think of. It's it's collating information and providing an answer based on the information you've read.
Right.
Which I suppose can be a weak definition of intelligence. But it's regurgitating things it knows. And it's been taught so many things that it knows a lot. But it's not really an independent thinker.
No, it learns through repetition.
Yeah.
It's more like autocomplete.
Yeah.
In that it's making, here's what's the best guess about the next word to put in the line here. And based on what it's been exposed to.
What it's seen before.
Right. How do I, Yeah, you ever play that game in Google? You type "how do I" and see what the suggestions are.
Oh, I see the celebrities that
yeah.
have to answer the questions for, like, here are the top hits about, you know, and it's does Jason Momoa, and
yeah,
it's like you know, drive a Ford,
and you type another character, and the suggestions change.
Right, keep going. Yeah,
most of those suggest. So I just type "does," and the second one is "does he like me?"
well, most, Steve, does he?
I don't know. Most of those. Oh, does an eel have bones? Oh, now that I want to read.
Hang on.
Does an eel have bones? Most of those suggestions are other people's questions.
Right.
And the short answer is no.
Eels? But does he like you?
Yeah.
Does the eel like you?
Or the bigger question.
Yeah.
If a fish bumps into the side of the tank, does it cry?
No, it just says damn.
Does a beaver look at a running stream and say, oh, hell no?
Oh, I don't think so. Not this again.
Not on my watch.
We don't do this here.
But Apple never mentioned AI when they announced the Vision Pro thing.
Yeah.
We still don't know what to
product.
Call it. Product. They never said anything about augmented reality or virtual reality because, and in this story from MKBHD, he talked about if it's a word, then there's a definition to that word. But if Apple can make things up. So Apple never talks about the screen refresh of its phones. They have ProMotion.
Right.
And this ProMotion is really better than last year's ProMotion.
Well, that's even a word that's, you can trademark.
Right. It's a trademarkable word, and they can control what the meaning is.
Right.
Rather than, you know, so, and that's actually a big argument now. What is virtual reality? Well, that one's kind of known. You put the glasses on, you're in a virtual environment. Well, then what's augmented reality? Well, you put the glasses on and you see real, but there's stuff superimposed over real. So, and the big meme is, you know, you're at a party, you see someone, and over their head pops up, yeah, this is Bill. You worked with him 4 years ago. He's got a wife, Jane, and three kids.
We were talking about that last week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then mixed reality. Well, that's a mix of augmented and virtual, but augmented is already mixed. So
we'll
see.
So
nobody knows what those words really mean. And the companies that make products, like the HoloLens and the Quest and the Sony and the Gear VR, things like that, they have different definitions
sure.
of the same words. So nobody knows. But Apple's going to patent Vision Pro using the R1 Reality Pro engine to monitor all the sensors. And that implies that there's a Vision non-Pro coming, which we all expect. $3,500. No, the HoloLens starts at $3,500 for the cheaper version. And so in a few a year or two, we expect there'll be a cheaper version, and then there'll be the consumer version. People are used to paying $1,000 for a phone now, so we
well, like anything else, though, you know, I mean, when flat screen TVs came out,
right?
Yep. You know, they were $3,000 and $4,000.
Oh,
yeah. And now you can go out and get a 40-inch for under $100.
I saw an 85-inch for $999.
Yeah, that's
holy. Well, then I looked at 110-inch for $150,000.
My wife bought one of those 85 inches, and
oh wow,
it's great.
We had a 55, and then went to
a
65.
But you gotta have the room for it.
We have the room. We have one room.
I was gonna say, build a whole another room for your TV because it's got to be so far away to enjoy it.
We live in a smaller house, but they before we moved in, the previous owner did manage to put one larger room in the back. And it's worked out really well. So she said, I would just want to buy a TV that's big enough that I can put the closed captions on and read them without putting my glasses on.
Yeah. When we went,
that'll do it.
When we went from a 40-inch standard definition to the 55-inch high definition,
right.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
And then we got the 60-inch 120 hertz.
Mm-hmm.
That was amazing.
Very smooth, yeah.
And now I've got the 65-inch 4K. Oh, my God, that's amazing.
But now
8Ks are still way too expensive.
For now.
Yeah.
Like you say, anything else, you know, you give it a year or two.
Yep. Well, and what we're finding is that most services charge extra for the 4K broadcast.
Content? Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'll see that on the TV when I'm in I'll go to a YouTube video in 4K. Mm-hmm. And then the ad shows, and it's only in like 720p. And oh my God, it's horrible.
It's all muddy.
Yeah. But then it shifts back into 4K, and yeah. Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah. The technology, you just got sometimes just be patient.
Yeah.
And, you know, the price.
And that's the rumor, because Apple hasn't said the Apple Vision Pro is 4K for each eye. Mm-hmm. But because it's an inch away from your eyeball, it's really super high res.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, and if you're feeling skeptical, you could say, oh, no, no, we're just going to have another round of inflation, and $3,500 won't seem like as much by next summer.
Well, then there have been some countries that have gone through hyperinflation.
Yeah.
You know, that in the morning, a loaf of bread is $1 million, and right. In the afternoon, that same loaf of bread is $100 million.
Or when you go to the restaurant and you place your order, and it's one price, and you get the bill, and it's a different price.
And literally wheelbarrows full of money, and then they do billion-dollar paper currency bills.
Right, yeah. No, that can be a trouble. I distinctly remember reading about the end of World War One and countries having issues with hyperinflation. And it ends up being not so great for a whole lot of people.
Yep. All right, well, let's go back to the phones. We got Jim from Arundica. Go ahead.
Hello. I have a computer that's running slow. Is there anything available that does a self-diagnosis to find out if there's anything wrong with it, or if there's something that I don't know about that could go through and search if there's any potential problem?
Not specifically. There's a lot of programs that claim they do, but a lot of them are FUD, just to try to get you to buy their product.
Right, or they handle any two of the 10 possible things.
Yeah.
They claim to do it all, but they really only do two things.
So have you tried the Security Tango?
No.
Yeah, if you go to securitytango.com and do the waltz.
Yep.
And Nick walks you through a step-by-step procedure on various programs to download and try on your machine. Because no one program will eliminate everything.
And most of the time, slowdowns are because there's crud gets in the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's programs running in the background.
Spyware,
that shouldn't
malware.
Be. Yeah.
And that presumes that all of your hardware is up to snuff.
Yeah.
Okay. How old of a machine is this, anyways?
Actually, it's pretty new.
Okay. That's good. That's good.
It's pretty new. Short of that, is there any place in town that you could recommend that I could have it taken a look at with charge?
There's a number of Yellow Page places that you could check in the Yellow Pages there for services. We don't recommend any particular one, but... Okay. Yeah, you could go to one of those, depending, you're in Arundicoit, look around there. There's, one over on Allen's Creek Road.
Yeah, they're good. We like them.
Those. Yep. Yeah.
You can ask your friends, too, to see who they go to or who not to go to.
You're my friends. That's what
yep. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I would check the Yellow Pages. And like I said, there's one on Allen Creek's Road that you could check out.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, that's the problem with my computer's running slow. We get that a lot.
Yeah.
And there's a thousand things.
They
call on the phone, my computer's running slow. What's wrong?
All right, so let's play a game. We'll go around as many times as we can. We'll each give one possible reason that a computer could run slow, and then we'll hand it off to the next person.
Yeah.
So I'll say full hard drive, and then I'll hand it off to Steve.
Malware in the background.
Okay. Spyware.
Yeah.
I will say failing hard drive.
Yeah. Big download.
Viruses.
Yeah.
I will say updates need to be run.
Yeah. Another user account is logged in.
Okay.
And I would say putting on and taking off so many programs and not using a program like Revo to properly uninstall them because it makes the registry so huge, it slows the machine down.
So it's this.
I'll say not enough RAM. Swapping to a slow spinning hard disk.
Yeah, I'll say spinning hard disk and disk and not solid state. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Temp files.
Temp files. Yeah.
Is
there's
a big
so
one.
Many things. Yeah. And people get frustrated when you can't answer their question instantly and you can't tell them how much it's going to cost to fix. We have no idea. There's dozens of things it could be.
Yeah, it depends on how much time, you know, and the size of the hard drive.
Yeah.
I mean,
you need time to diagnose the actual. Yeah. What you're experiencing is a symptom.
Directory corruption on the hard drive.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you have to you have to take the symptom and work backwards to the root cause. Then you can worry about solving the root cause.
And sometimes it's replacing a piece of the hardware and seeing if that fixes it.
It also can be, and it's not my turn yet, but I will also say people's expectations about how fast a computer should run.
You buy your computer and it's really, really fast, and 3 years later it feels really slow and nothing's changed.
And you go visit your buddy and he's got a new computer and it looks really fast, and then you go home to yours and it doesn't seem nearly as performant as.
Or you're installing the program and it puts in other junk.
Sure.
You know, other programs that will add additional toolbars or slow your machine down. And you sit there and say, I didn't want that.
You probably didn't.
You didn't, but you clicked so happy because you got click happy and said, yeah. And you installed all this other junk that's now running in the startup menu that's slowing your machine down.
We've had, so Intel just announced that they're going to change the name of their chips.
Yeah, I saw this.
So instead of i3, i5, i7, i9, and you know the bigger the number, the faster the chip is.
Well, it's got to be.
So 15 years they've been using the i series.
Right.
They're going to start changing the names. So it's going to be the Evo and the V Pro.
Perfect.
Nobody
will get that confused over
the phone. And so there's no way to compare them. And one of the big problems now, and then the Ultra.
Yes, I noticed that.
Yeah, the Ultra. So so we're wondering how much of this is coming from the Mac, because we've got the M2, the M2 Pro,
M2 Max.
The M2 Max, and the M2 Ultra. So now we need another word. So the Pro is two M2s together. The Max is two Pros together. The Ultra is two Maxes together.
Right.
but you can compare them. But what we have often seen is that PC retailers, one big box store gets this line of computer,
right,
and the other retail store gets a different line of the same brand, and there's no way to compare the two of them because they're slightly different.
And the good news for the retailer is that means that customers can't price match against each one store against another.
Yeah, especially if you're using, say, like an iChip versus an AMD chip. Because the biggest thing with AMD is they'd sit there and say, because it would be touted, that's a little bit slower. No.
Yeah.
It might have been a little slower.
The megahertz rating.
Yeah, the megahertz rating. But in the number of processes that it did per cycle, the AMD chip was faster than the iChips.
Yeah.
Right. It's like the difference between having a V8 and a four-cylinder engine. You're getting more explosions per RPM. Yep. So
yeah.
Even at 3,000 RPMs, the V8's doing much, much more, providing much more power.
Yeah. And so it makes it harder to compare chips, and therefore harder to compare computers. So now you're shopping on price. That's another thing from Apple's announcements. The 15-inch MacBook Air, we've installed quite a few of those in the week it's been out. That's pretty good.
Yeah, no, it's proving to be very popular.
And it's gorgeous. It's relatively inexpensive, and it's one of the first times Apple has done a big screen in a low-end machine.
Yeah.
Traditionally, Apple has their cheap computers with small screens.
Right.
And the expensive computers with big screens. And you couldn't get anything in the middle. I remember a big Microsoft commercial years ago where someone wanted a 17-inch computer with for $1,000. And Apple's 17-inch model was $3,500.
Sure.
$34.99 again.
Right.
Because they didn't make a cheap computer with a big screen. Mm-hmm. It was a powerful computer. So a couple years ago, they started this now with the 14-inch and the 16-inch.
Mm-hmm.
The only difference is the size.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want the most powerful computer, you can get it in a 14-inch. And not have to spend extra for the 16-inch. And so that's what I bought, the 14-inch, because it was lighter than the 16. But it's the exact same power,
right?
Which is cool. So now we've got this in the low end of the Mac market, and they actually had to lower the price of an old machine to
fit
this in there. So now it's $999 for the M1, $10.99 for the 13-inch M2 and $12.99 for the 15-inch M2.
Right.
Which is all the computer anyone needs. The irony is that the 13-inch M2 MacBook Pro is also $12.99.
Right.
So you get a smaller screen, but you get a touch bar and a fan.
Right.
So theoretically, the MacBook Pro can be faster because there's a fan to keep it cooler.
It won't throttle as soon.
Right. In practice, the fan almost never kicks on anyway.
Yeah.
Although we have started seeing it. We're putting a new security system in our office. We've got 10 cameras running.
Uh-huh.
And on Jackie's MacBook Pro, it's getting warm.
Okay.
And the fan starts
finally.
Kicking. Yeah.
Starts
you're
kicking
finally,
in.
Finally getting there.
So if you're editing
hitting the max.
Yeah. If you're editing multiple 8K streams, you might need... No, then you go to the 14-inch that is the M2 Pro processor and is even faster. I mentioned this when I got this computer. When I'm doing the sound bites editing, exporting the final MP3 file used to take about 6 minutes.
Okay.
Now on my M1 Pro,
right,
90 seconds.
My goodness.
And I only do that once a week, so it's not that big a deal. But yeah. If you're an audio production engineer and you're right. doing that 100 times a day.
Yeah, that's a lot of time.
Yeah.
You know. You got to worry about, sitting there and watching that time click away, and you could be doing other things, you know, or producing more stuff.
Yep, and for 90% of the people, that 15-inch MacBook Air, even though it's technically the entry-level computer, is fine. The M2 processor is so darn fast.
Yeah.
I've had my M1 MacBook Pro. This was like the first generation M1.
Mm-hmm.
And I charge it twice a week. I know I tell people that and they don't believe me. But I charge it twice a week. I use it every day. And I'm trying to remember the times that I've heard the fan come on. And it's like in the couple of years I've heard it, maybe... A handful of times?
Well, my fan's running at 2,500 RPM, and I still don't hear it.
Right, right. So it's been, the M-Series has been a remarkably efficient
infrastructure. Yep, and that's the other thing Intel is trying to do with their new chips, is they realize that Apple's silicon, because Apple is designing it themselves for their own systems, they can customize what they want the chip to do.
Mm-hmm.
Intel has a problem where they're making a generic chip for PCs that do a million different things.
Right.
So Apple can have a chip that has dedicated ProRes, decompressors in it, which is now the Ultra in the high end, where if Intel has a generic chip that you put in a PC, you don't know if that person's going to be doing word processing or going to be doing Hollywood movie editing.
Right.
And so they're can't make as custom a chip as Apple can, which gives Apple a big advantage.
And that's always been Apple's MO, is if you are in charge of the logic boards and the keyboard and all of the bits and pieces, your software people know what hardware is in it,
mm-hmm.
and your hardware people know which software people are going to be using or building. You can integrate a bit more tightly and reek out some efficiencies of that. Now, for general purpose computing, which is kind of the world that Intel has been in for 50 years, that's a different idea. And the idea at the time was for hobbyists in the 70s who wanted to put a chip in and then get some DRAM and then get all the other circuits it took to make a bus and develop all these things. It was more about cobbling together, and it was a hobbyist kit kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the personal computer industry kind of grew out of that. And even when IBM had their own, big blue desktop machines, those were coming out of a situation where you buy those so that you can put the big server in the server room and then everybody connects to it. But the hobbyist nature of it, you don't really necessarily know what OS people are going to run on it. You don't necessarily know precisely what type of workload people are going to use with it or what type of equipment they're going to use. And they can project and say, well, this chip is specialized for mm-hmm. this, but you never really know.
Yeah.
Okay, folks, that music tells me that you have wasted, I wouldn't say wasted. You have been consumed by 2 hours of sound bites.
True.
And hopefully you are walking away with a little more knowledge than when you first came. But it's been our delight to come to you. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we thank you for joining us this past 2 hours here at Soundbites. But hey, don't worry, as Nick would say, we will be back next Saturday with more entertainment, more news, more views, and hopefully more of you folks calling in, giving us your opinions and questions so that we can help you out here as we have for the past 33 years here at Jazz 90.1. So, you know, hey, tune in again next Saturday. We'll be here at 12 o'clock. Have fun.